United States versus Price, Supreme Court of the United States, 1966. Mr. Justice Fortas delivered the opinion of the court. These are direct appeals from the dismissal in part of two indictments returned by the United States Grand Jury for the Southern District of Mississippi. The indictments allege assaults by the accused persons upon the rights of the asserted victims to due process of law under the 14th Amendment. The indictment in number 59 charges 18 persons with violations of 18 U.S. Code Section 241. In number 60, the same 18 persons are charged with offenses based on 18 U.S. Code Section 242. These are among the so-called civil rights statutes, which have come to us from Reconstruction days, the period in our history which also produced the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution. The sole question presented in these appeals is whether the specified statutes make criminal the conduct for which the individuals were indicted. It is an issue of construction, not of constitutional power. We have no doubt of the power of Congress to enforce by appropriate criminal sanction every right guaranteed by the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. The indictment alleges that on June 21, 1964, Cecil Ray Price, the deputy sheriff of Neshoba County, Mississippi, detained Michael Henry Schwerner, James Earl Cheney, and Andrew Goodman in the Neshoba County Jail, located in Philadelphia, Mississippi. He released them in the dark of that night. He then proceeded by automobile on Highway 19 to intercept his erstwhile wards. He removed the three men from their automobile, placed them in an official automobile of the Neshoba County Sheriff's Office, and transported them to a place on an unpaved road. These acts, it is alleged, were part of a plan and conspiracy whereby the three men were intercepted by the 18 defendants, including Deputy Sheriff Price, Sheriff Rainey, and Patrolman Willis of the Philadelphia, Mississippi Police Department. The purpose and intent of the release from custody and the interception, according to the charge, were to punish the three men. The defendants, it is alleged, did willfully assault, shoot, and kill each of the three. And the charge continues, the bodies of the three victims were transported by one of the defendants from the rendezvous on the unpaved road to the vicinity of the construction site of an earthen dam approximately 5 miles southwest of Philadelphia, Mississippi. These are federal and not state indictments. They do not charge as crimes the alleged assaults or murders. The indictments are framed to fit the stated federal statutes, and the question before us is whether the attempt of the draftsman for the grand jury in Mississippi has been successful, whether the indictments charge offenses against the various defendants which may be prosecuted under the designated federal statutes. We shall deal first with the indictment in number 60, based on Section 242 of the Criminal Code, and then with the indictment in number 59 under Section 241. We do this for ease of exposition and because Section 242 was enacted by Congress about 4 years prior to Section 241. Section 242 was enacted in 1866, Section 241 in 1870. Part 1, number 60. Section 242 defines a misdemeanor punishable by fine of not more than $1,000 or imprisonment for not more than 1 year or both. So far as here significant, it provides punishment for whoever under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom willfully subjects any inhabitant of any state to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States. The indictment in number 60 contains 4 counts, each of which names as defendants the 3 officials and 15 non-official persons. The first count charges, on the basis of allegations substantially as set forth above, that all of the defendants conspired to willfully subject Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman to the deprivation of their right, privilege, and immunity secured and protected by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, not to be summarily punished without due process of law by persons acting under color of the laws of the state of Mississippi. This is said to constitute a conspiracy to violate Section 242 and, therefore, an offense under 18 U.S. Code Section 371. The latter section, the general conspiracy statute, makes it a crime to conspire to commit any offense against the United States. The penalty for violation is the same as for direct violation of Section 242, that is, it is a misdemeanor. On a motion to dismiss, the district court sustained this first count as to all defendants. As to the sheriff, deputy sheriff, and patrolman, the court recognized that each was clearly alleged to have been acting under color of law as required by Section 242. As to the private persons, the district court held that it is immaterial to the conspiracy that these private individuals were not acting under color of law because the count charges that they were conspiring with persons who were so acting. The court necessarily was satisfied that the indictment in alleging the arrest, detention, release, interception, and killing of Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman adequately stated as the purpose of the conspiracy of violation of Section 242, and that this section could be violated by willfully subjecting the victims to the deprivation of their right, privilege, and immunity under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. No appeal was taken by the defendants from the decision of the trial court with respect to the first count, and it is not before us for adjudication. The second, third, and fourth counts of the indictment in number 60 charge all of the defendants not with conspiracy, but with substantive violations of Section 242. Each of these counts charges that the defendants acting under color of the laws of the state of Mississippi did willfully assault, shoot, and kill Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, respectively, for the purpose and with the intent of punishing each of the three, and that the defendants did thereby willfully deprive each of the rights, privileges, and immunities secured and protected by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, namely, due process of law. The district court held these counts of the indictment valid as to the sheriff, deputy sheriff, and patrolman, but it dismissed them as against the non-official defendants because the counts do not charge that the latter were officers in fact or de facto in anything allegedly done by them under color of law. We note that by sustaining these counts against the three officers, the court again necessarily concluded that an offense under Section 242 is properly stated by allegations of willful deprivation under color of law of life and liberty without due process of law. We agree. No other result would be permissible under the decisions of this court. But we cannot agree that the second, third, or fourth counts may be dismissed as against the non-official defendants. Section 242 applies only where a person indicted has acted under color of law. Private persons jointly engaged with state officials in the prohibited action are acting under color of law for purposes of the statute. To act under color of law does not require that the accused be an officer of the state. It is enough that he is a willful participant in joint activity with the state or its agents. In the present case, according to the indictment, the brutal joint adventure was made possible by state detention and calculated release of the prisoners by an officer of the state. This action, clearly attributable to the state, was part of the monstrous design described by the indictment. State officers participated in every phase of the alleged venture, the release from jail, the interception, assault, and murder. It was a joint activity from start to finish. Those who took advantage of participation by state officers in accomplishment of the foul purpose alleged, must suffer the consequences of that participation. In effect, if the allegations are true, they were participants in official lawlessness, acting in willful concert with state officers, and hence under color of law. Appellees urge that the decision of the district court was based upon a construction of the indictment to the effect that it did not charge the private individuals with acting under color of law. Consequently, they urge us to affirm in number 60. In any event, they submit, since the trial court's decision was based on the inadequacy of the indictment and not on construction of the statute, we have no jurisdiction to review it on direct appeal. We do not agree. Each count of the indictment specifically alleges that all of the defendants were acting under color of the laws of the state of Mississippi. The fault lies not in the indictment, but in the district court's view that the statute requires that each offender be an official or that he act in an official capacity. We have jurisdiction to consider this statutory question on direct appeal, and as we have shown, the trial court's determination of it is in error. Since each of the private individuals is indictable as a principal acting under color of law, we need not consider whether he might be held to answer as an aider or abettor under 18 U.S. Code Section 2, despite omission to include such a charge in the indictment. Accordingly, we reversed the dismissal of the second, third, and fourth counts of the indictment in number 60 and remand for trial. Part 2, number 59. Number 59 charges each of the 18 defendants with a felony, a violation of Section 241. This indictment is in one count. It charges that the defendants conspired together to injure, oppress, threaten, and intimidate Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman in the free exercise and enjoyment of the right and privilege secured to them by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, not to be deprived of life or liberty without due process of law by persons acting under color of the laws of Mississippi. The indictment alleges that it was the purpose of the conspiracy that Deputy Sheriff Price would release Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman from custody in the Neshoba County Jail at such time that Price and the other 17 defendants could and would intercept them and threaten assault and shoot and kill them. The penalty under Section 241 is a fine of not more than $5,000 or imprisonment for not more than 10 years or both. Section 241 is a conspiracy statute. It reads as follows. If two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any citizen in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, or if two or more persons go in disguise on the highway or on the premises of another with the intent to prevent or hinder his free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege so secured, they shall be fined not more than $5,000 or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. The district court dismissed the indictment as to all defendants. In effect, although Section 241 includes rights or privileges secured by the Constitution or laws of the United States without qualification or limitation, the court held that it does not include rights protected by the 14th Amendment. It will be recalled that in number 60, the district court held that Section 242 included the denial of 14th Amendment rights, the same right to due process involved in the indictment under Section 241. Both include rights or privileges secured by the Constitution or laws of the United States. Neither is qualified or limited. Each includes, presumably, all of the Constitution and laws of the United States. To the reader of the two sections, versed only in the English language, it may seem bewildering that the two sections could be so differently read. But the district court purported to read the statutes with the gloss of Williams 1. In that case, the only case in which this court has squarely confronted the point at issue, the court did, in fact, sustain dismissal of an indictment under Section 241. But it did not, as the district court incorrectly assumed, hold that Section 241 is inapplicable to 14th Amendment rights. The court divided equally on the issue. Four justices, in an opinion by Mr. Justice Frankfurter, were of the view that Section 241 only covers conduct which interferes with rights arising from the substantive powers of the federal government, rights which Congress can beyond doubt constitutionally secure against interference by private individuals. Four other justices, in an opinion by Mr. Justice Douglas, found no support for Mr. Justice Frankfurter's view in the language of the section, its legislative history, or its judicial interpretation up to that time. They read the statute as plainly covering conspiracies to injure others in the exercise of 14th Amendment rights. They could see no obstacle to using it to punish deprivations of such rights. Dismissal of the indictment was affirmed because Mr. Justice Black voted with those who joined Mr. Justice Frankfurter. He did so, however, for an entirely different reason, that the prosecution was barred by res judicata. And he expressed no view on the issue whether Section 241 as applied is too vague and uncertain in scope to be consistent with the Fifth Amendment. Williams 1 thus left the proper construction of Section 241 as regards its applicability to protect 14th Amendment rights an open question.